Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Coming up, being young, black, and feminist in America, Morgan Jerkin's provocative collection of essays. But first, what happens next in Syria? Weapons inspectors are being prevented from visiting the sites of the chemical attacks in Syria, even though Syrian government leaders said they would be permitted to see them. Russian and Syrian representatives continue to say the attacks were either concocted by Western governments or staged by rebel forces. One question for our guests this morning: are the military strikes of Friday night the sum total of the American response? Amanda Sloat is with us. She's a senior fellow at Brookings, and she joins us today from Washington. Amanda, appreciate the time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You noted in a recent article that the April 2017 strike, so about a year ago, did little to deter al-Assad from using chemical weapons again. Are these strikes any different as far as you can tell?
Well, it remains to be seen. I mean, certainly the fact that we had strikes again a year later suggests that what was done a year ago was not sufficient deterrence. The administration has expressed their conviction that they will continue to attack if there is repeated use of CW. So the question is going to be whether the regime continues to use additional chemical weapons and whether the administration maintains its commitment to continue launching strikes on Syria in response if it does.
Did Syria have enough lead time to be able to move some things out of, let's say, range of these missile strikes? And do you think Syria had a sense of where the strikes were coming to?
It certainly seems likely, given some of the initial indication from President Trump that there was going to be a military response, that Syria had the ability to move some of their assets. There were reports that they moved things to bases where Russian and other forces were. What was notable about the strikes this time as compared to a year ago is these very narrowly targeted research centers, storage facilities, and sites that were used specifically for the manufacture and storage of chemical weapons, as opposed to last year where there was more targeting of some aircraft and runways. Presumably, the administration decided to take very narrowly targeted action against chemical weapons to ensure that it was not seen as targeting the regime specifically or Russian or Iranians that are supporting the regime.
What's notable to you about that decision?
I think it's the battle space in Syria has continued to get more complicated over time. And I think President Trump's initial tweets were unfortunate because they were directed specifically against the Russians in terms of watch out, the missiles are coming. And that raised a lot of questions, certainly in Washington, about what the aim of the strikes was going to be, whether they were going to be narrowly targeting the CW usage or whether the U.S. was looking to broaden its strategy. There was also a lot of rhetoric coming out of the Russians about threats to shoot down any U.S. missile strikes. And so I think the very narrow targeting tried to be consistent with U.S. stated policy of wanting to go after the use of chemical weapons and not wanting to broaden military action to targeting either the stability of the regime or its Russian and Iranian backers.
Although aren't President Trump's tweets an acknowledgement that Russia has been supportive, apparently in all strategies and moves by al-Assad, and the president is saying, we know Russia supports this, and that's not going to prevent us from responding this way.
That's absolutely right. And frankly, I think a lot of the rhetoric got quite heated. It appears that President Trump's initial tweets to Russia were in response to comments that were made by the Russian ambassador to Beirut. So this was not necessarily remarks that were made by Russian President Putin or that were made by the Russian Foreign Ministry, but initially by an ambassador in Lebanon. That was followed by President Trump's stronger rhetoric about wanting to react. And then there was efforts by the Foreign Ministry in Moscow to tamp down the rhetoric, and certainly we started to see the beginning of a normal policy process here in Washington to more deliberately consider which targets we would be striking. But you're absolutely right that the Russians have been backing the Assad regime for a number of years.
Amanda, I was listening to an interview this morning, just a few minutes ago, actually, with a former weapons inspector who was talking about why al-Assad would use chemical weapons again. And he said they're basically the weapons of bullies. This is so puzzling as to why, with many other, I assume, options at his fingertips, why al-Assad returns to using chemical weapons when he faces the condemnation of the world and, by the way, the scrutiny of the world.
It is very curious. Certainly you have a humanitarian community wondering why the West is only prepared to take military action when chemical weapons are used, given that conventional weapons have killed thousands of Syrians over the duration of the conflict. But you're right that there is an international convention, there is international norms, that the use of chemical weapons really is beyond the pale in modern warfare. It prompted Obama to consider taking strikes back in 2013, ultimately led to what at the time people believed was the removal of certainly the vast majority of chemical weapons. The U.S. took strikes a year ago and now has struck in response to that. Presumably, there's a morale issue in terms of just how devastating the use of chemical weapons is on the local population, but it doesn't seem to make sense as a political strategy, given that it is the one thing that has thus far mobilized the international community to take military action against the regime.
I've noted what you just said about it was presumed after President Obama struck the agreement, I guess, that Syria would remove the chemical weapons. Apparently that wasn't true, or they've had a couple of years to rebuild those chemical weapons stocks. What do you think it is?
That's a good question. I think there probably was some healthy skepticism at the time that the Assad regime had not reported every single chemical weapons storage facility that they had. Certainly, they removed a large volume, but I think, you know, people had some healthy skepticism that there could still be some remaining sites. So it is an open question as to whether or not these stockpiles were in undeclared sites by the regime at the time of that agreement to remove the chemical weapons, or whether they have rebuilt their supplies or gotten these from other backers of the regime.
Amanda Sloat is with us. If you've tuned into the discussion this morning, she's a senior fellow at Brookings, and we're asking her for the benefit of her experience and her insight here on what happens next in Syria, how to understand what has happened in the last couple of weeks there, and then how that informs the next moves by the United States, by Syria, by Russia, some of the key players in the area. If you have a question for Amanda on this, I think we could fit it in. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. I'm on Twitter at CarrieMPR. Amanda, I was reading something that former State Department Counselor Elliot Cohn wrote in The Atlantic about kind of the reaction to what the United States did with these military strikes last week. He writes, "Some would say at least we did something. Surely that's better than nothing." Cohn adds, "No, it is not. A slight slap preceded by bluster and followed by evasion and more bluster conveys a very precise message. Actually, but not the one that the president believes and perhaps some of his advisors have now convinced themselves that they've sent. It is that the commander-in-chief of the American Armed Forces is an impulsive coward." There's a lot of criticism that President Obama also didn't follow through on the red line. Now we see what you've described as pretty narrow targets here. How do you see it, and how do you think Cohn is analyzing it?
I agree with him to the extent that the initial tweets by the president, the very tough rhetoric, were very unhelpful. It created a lot of confusion about what U.S. policy in Syria was, especially if you remember that just a week before, President Trump was announcing that he wanted all U.S. troops to leave Syria within 48 hours, ideally. Now, you could have two separate missions. One is what the U.S. has been involved in since the Obama administration in terms of countering the Islamic State, and then a second, more narrow mission in terms of punitive strikes in retaliation for the use of chemical weapons, which is what we ended up seeing. But the president's rhetoric really ended up conflating those two things and created a lot of confusion about what U.S. intentions were. Following on that rhetoric, we had, as I was discussing earlier, very narrowly targeted strikes against three specific sites and only sites that were focusing on the use of chemical weapons. And so that rhetoric really ended up raising some questions and confusing some people about what ultimate U.S. objectives were. And many people, especially in Washington, are now continuing to raise the question of what U.S. policy is going forward, what it is we are wanting to achieve. There was additional confusion here over the weekend with Nikki Haley, the ambassador to the United Nations, announcing that the administration was going to sanction Russian companies who were seen to be assisting Syria's chemical weapons program. And then the White House yesterday came back and said that this was not necessarily the case, that the president had not approved those additional measures. So we already have a very complicated and volatile situation on the ground in Syria, and the mixed messaging coming out of the administration is simply adding to the confusion.
We're also getting that reporting, I think it's in the Washington Post, that the president did not know how wide the sanctions were against Russia. Now, this is for the alleged poisoning of the two people in Britain, but that he is upset that the sanctions for that incident, which has had a lot of Western support, were broader and wider than he expected that they would be. How does that fit into what we've just said about the rolling back of these other sanctions?
Yeah, so that case was not the sanctions. It was the expulsion of diplomats, of Russian diplomats. I think the president, according to the Washington Post report, believed that the United States and the European Union were going to expel the same number of diplomats. And then he was surprised to find that European countries expelled less. It seems that the sum total of diplomats expelled by EU member states as a whole was equivalent to what the U.S. was expelling, but it was not equivalent to what individual European countries within the EU was expelling.
Why do you think it matters?
You know, we've seen, again, a lot of mixed messaging coming out of this White House about being tough on Russia. You've had advisors that want to take very tough action in terms of sanctions, the expulsion of diplomats, retaliation for what we're seeing here in Syria. And the president has not wanted to be particularly tough on Russia. And I think what we saw with his reaction to the diplomats was that he was not wanting the United States to be seen as tougher on Russia than these other European countries were. You know, his reasons for doing that, I think, are open to debate. But clearly, he is not wanting to be seen as being particularly strong, responsive to Russia.
You mentioned a minute ago that the president just a week or 10 days ago was talking about pulling troops out of Syria. Now, in the last couple of days, French President Macron has said that he is convinced that the United States is there to stay and that he has had those assurances from President Trump. Yes, again, with the contradictory messaging here, would the president tell the French president one thing and tell the American people something else? And what's the potential damage in that?
It's certainly going to continue to muddy the waters if the president is giving different messages to our allies than what he is saying publicly. We've seen similar disconnects in terms of what the U.S. position is going to be vis-a-vis the Syrian Kurds that it has supported on the ground with him telling the Turks that he's going to stop providing arms to these forces, the Pentagon saying it wants to continue cooperating with them. I do believe that the president ultimately wants to pull U.S. forces out of Syria. He does not want to have the U.S. on his watch in a long-term conflict. But again, what's confusing is he was critical of his predecessor for not sustaining a troop presence in Iraq during the conflict there, and was also critical about President Obama in terms of wanting to pull troops out of Afghanistan by a certain date. So we have been seeing his messaging on repeated foreign policy fronts is contradictory of what he criticized his predecessors for doing.
Amanda, last question here. You have heard the language about al-Assad as being a war criminal. More and more people are using that language. Do you think it looks like he's going to win this civil war and stay in power. Do you think he ever runs the risk of facing some kind of international charges?
I certainly hope that he does. He has been very brutal in the treatment of large numbers of his citizens, with thousands and thousands of deaths and millions of people that have been displaced by this conflict. There continue to be ongoing peace processes through the United Nations, through other mechanisms. But really, until we get into a place where we have sufficient leverage to try and force change, or whether we have his backers in the form of Russia and Iran trying to negotiate some sort of solution, it's going to be very, very difficult. But absolutely would like to see him held accountable for the atrocious things he has done.
And my assumption that he will remain in power looks right, doesn't it? Is that how you assess it?
Yeah, certainly in the near term. It's very difficult to imagine circumstances under which he agrees to some sort of negotiated transition, and nobody in the West has the military desire to try and overthrow him, and certainly Russia and Iran seem to be committed to keeping him in place for the time being as well.
Amanda, thank you. Good to have the clarity.
Thank you.
Amanda Sloat with us, senior fellow in the Brookings Institution, and giving us some insight on the events in Syria and some of the exchanges between the United States and Russia over the last few days.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at @KerriNPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.